everyone, and welcome to another episode of Stay Pod. I know it's been a while since we've actually done one of these podcasts, but we are so happy to be back with season three. And season three, we're actually starting with a bang. I'm here with a very, very special guest. Some of you guys might have, you know, seen her on our YouTube channel. But today we're going to talk about energy. And, you know, when we think about our energy bills and, you know, we don't think about cybersecurity. So I'm here joined with the lovely Sharifa. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi. So I'm Sharifa Lahan. Do I say what I do or we wait till later?
Feel free to say what you do.
Fantastic. So I'm a government policy advisor working on energy cybersecurity policy.
That's great. And I think, you know, one thing, I've said this before, like, I'm so happy when I get people who come on here who actually work in government, because I think cybersecurity is seen as a private sector issue, but people don't really think about what is the government doing. And I'm also conscious that I can't ask you too many personal questions, having been in the civil service myself. So I think, you know, you've discussed this before, but if you could just talk a little bit about yourself and your career journey, like, you know, why energy and why government?
Yeah, thank you. So in terms of my career, it's mostly been in government and mostly in sort of the national security. So cybersecurity will fall into national security, into the national security field. So started back in the Home Office in litigation. So just kind of, you know, defending the decisions that the Home Office make, you know, judicial reviews, all those sorts of exciting stuff. And then move after that into working in policy. So in counterterrorism policy, and then working in sort of, you know, intelligence, so investigatory powers and then data protection. And now I'm working in cybersecurity and generally in terms of policy advice. My kind of niche has been in the regulatory kind of legislative phase, basically. So ensuring that, you know, we have the right legislation in place. And when I worked in investigative powers, it was on the Investigative Powers Act, for example, and then, you know, on the Data Protection Act, or more specifically in relation to the intelligence services and how they process our data, retain it, all this good stuff. In terms of the energy, like you said, you know, we don't necessarily think about, you know, energy when we think of cybersecurity. We just think, you know, our own protection, ensuring, you know, passwords and things are protected. But as you said, it's not just a private sector issue, it's not just a private issue. There's a whole, you know, there's a whole realm that we don't necessarily think about. So it's very interesting to work in it and see, you know, what, you know, and facilitate what the government is doing in this sector.
Okay, thank you. And, you know, I think this kind of brings us nicely to the next question. And that is, especially for those of us who do not know, what is energy cybersecurity policy? Like, what does it entail?
Yeah. So my my specific, I get niche would be in relation to regulations. So I work in the regulatory space. So more specifically on what's known as the Network and Information Systems Regulation. So NIS, which came into force in 2008, and essentially it places a duty on providers of essential services. So energy falls into one of those essential services. So services that, you know, if they were to be affected by cyber attack, would be detrimental for our society's operations. You know, there's also things like transport, health, energy comes within that. So essentially it's ensuring that the duties under the NIS regulations are essentially put in place by you know, energy providers, and also ensuring that, you know, we have policies in place to actually facilitate those duties. You know, things like providing guidance for the sector, working with the sector themselves, and ensuring that, you know, the requirements that we have in place, that we put them in place in a way that's necessary and proportionate. So yeah, it's working with the different sectors. So in the energy sector in the UK, you know, it's very vast. There's a, you know, wide array of, you know, of sectors that will come into scope, or, you know, entities that will come into scope in terms of energy. But for us specifically, currently under NIS, We deal with, you know, the upstream gas and electricity sector, as well as the downstream upstream gas and oil sector subsectors, as well as the downstream gas and electricity subsectors. So it's ensuring that those subsectors are essentially protected. They have the mitigations in place to withhold and mitigate a cyber attack. And, you know, if it did take place, that they have the right processes in place to ensure that they dealt with it, you know, the incident response, basically. So that's what, in a nutshell, that I do.
that's really interesting. And you know, when you talk about upstream and downstream, what's the difference? Is it that upstream is more less, or we're like, as individuals, we're more detached from it, and like downstream is like more of our electric, gas bill and things like that?
Yeah, so upstream and downstream are the different, so it's more sector specific, so it's how it so it's just the differences. I wouldn't say it's to do with the individual, so it's more how the data is processed, how the energy is processed, you know, how it's generated and things like that. So it's not necessarily with the end user, it's more with industry itself.
Okay, no, that's very interesting. And also I wanted to kind of make that distinction in case people are coming from not a energy background and they're trying to understand what we're trying to say. So you know, you've talked about it a bit, and I think going back to your background, I know you studied law, and like your niche is more of like the regulations of the space. So from that angle, what are like the main threats that you see on a day-to-day basis, in your opinion?
So I think the main threats would be in terms of the energy sector. So, you know, nowadays we're moving to a much more digitized world, and, you know, the energy sector is not indifferent. So, you know, there's an increase in, you know, the digitization of the energy sector. So we're relying more on IT rather than, you know, just operational technology. I would say the main threat is, how do we ensure that, you know, things like data and customers' data, as well as, you know, we're now moving towards a more, you know, digital way of operating these, you know, power grids and things like that. How do we ensure that those withhold and withstand the cyber threats that are in this, you know, in this play, in this sector? So I would say that those are the main things. It's, you know, we're moving to a more, you know, we're moving towards more renewable energy. Mm-hmm. Smart energy is a big thing. You know, we now have smart meters. So these are things that potentially, you know, is digitized, anything that's in the cloud or, you know, online could be hacked and could, you know, face a cyber attack. So it's how ensuring that, you know, these, you know, infrastructures are protected, customer data is protected, and in the grand scheme of things, to ensure that we don't, you know, for example, face a blackout, which would be, you know, the worst case scenario.
I can imagine. And just listen to what you're saying. I think for those who may be thinking, oh, energy, because we're just like, you know, we may not think that we are, you know, that data has been collected from us because we're literally just doing our meter and, you know, but like you said, customer data from like the energy companies, where do they go, you know, when we pay our bills, those type of data, and not just what we see on a day-to-day basis. So that's definitely like expanded my mind, and I'm sure for some of the listeners as well. So, you know, who is interested in this space? I think, I don't know, when I think about energy, a lot of people think oil, but I'm happy that you've kind of also talked about renewable energy and even like smart energy as well. So who are like the key players in this space?
Yes, I'd say from my perspective and what I see on a day-to-day basis and who I kind of deal with, certainly government, you know, as I said, it's about protecting our national infrastructure and ensuring that, you know, we don't, as I said, in the worst case scenario, we don't face the blackout. Mm-hmm. And, you know, generally the energy sector, so, you know, operators in the energy sector, ensuring that they have the right mitigations in place, because, you know, it would affect them financially, it would affect their customer data. As we've spoken about, if you were to, you know, if they were to face a cyber attack. And then as well, you know, before we left the EU, it was definitely, you know, the NIS regulations were based off of the NIS directive, which was, you know, EU legislation. So, you know, there's there's, you know, EU level kind of thinking about this as well. So I would say in my day-to-day basis, those are the main kind of, you know, people that I, yeah, think about in terms of, you know, these are my main stakeholders. I work closely with, you know, and we, my department is jointly responsible as a competent authority with Ofgem.
Okay.
So, you know, Ofgem and the health and safety executive. So these are the kind of, you know, stakeholders that we deal with and work with to ensure that we have the right mitigation in place eventually. And of course, you know, as you've identified, the needs for protection and what drives the energy sector is customers. So what do the end users, you know, what do they need, what are their needs? You know, we're moving towards a more digitized world because that's the way the world is moving, that's what customers want. They want to be able to, you know, quickly and effectively pay their bills, you know, access their energy, etc. So you know, what the things that the customers are, you know, that are important to customers are driving the sector, and which then in turn mean that they drive the kind of mitigations and protections that, you know, need to be in place.
No, I like that. And I also liked how you explained, like, it's an end user thing. Like, if we, gosh, in cybersecurity, we're always talking about the difference between convenience and privacy, and convenience and security, and what your user wants. And it's nice that the energy sector is also thinking, as they are becoming more digitalized, of what security risk then comes with those new tech. So thank you for that. And I think the next question is, I think we've talked about the issue. These are the risks that we see. And you talked a bit about mitigation. But, you know, in your opinion, or from what you've seen, in generally, how are cyber attacks handled, would you say?
So that's probably something that I wouldn't, from, I guess, my perspective, one, have much dealing with, and two, go into much detail on, just because, you know, I feel like, you know, exposing, you know, how things are handled and things like that. But generally, I can say for us, and, you know, from a regulatory perspective, you know, if there was to be one of the things that we drive, and one of the things that the NIST regulation drives, is ensuring that, you know, once, if and when an incident does take place, you know, having the right mechanisms in place to actually identify those, you know, incidents, because, as you know, sometimes cyber attacks take place for, you know, a long while before they're detected. So ensuring that, you know, once it's detected, having mechanisms in place to report them. So under the NIRS regulations, there are thresholds that, you know, we've identified that if you know, a cyber attack hits this threshold, you know, you have to, you know, report it. You know, there's several reporting, you know, kind of mechanisms or requirements, I should say, that are in place. So yeah, reporting it, having the right mechanisms to deal with it. You know, there's powers to investigate it as well, to ensure that, you know, once you know, it's been detected, and, you know, perhaps the incident has been dealt with, actually investigating to understand, you know, where it came from, why, you know, what gaps, you know, needs to be I guess dealt with, in order to ensure that, you know, future such cyber attacks don't take place. I would say under NIRS there are those kind of incident reported mechanisms and incident dealing. So ways to deal with an incident and to investigate it after an incident does occur.
And I think what I've been able to pull from that is the NIST regulation and how important it is in the energy space. So, you know, what would you say? Because you talked about gaps. Do you think there's any gaps in the current policy that we have? And this can be in general with, you know, not just specific to the UK, it could be anywhere else. Or do you think that the gaps might then show up in the future when tech has, you know, because tech is always evolving.
I think the gaps, you know, as we're in ever evolving, especially in terms of digitization of things, you know, as things evolve, sometimes on a daily basis, you know, with something that then leads to gaps that, you know, regulations might not, you know, necessarily have have dealt with, or you know, have provisions for. Certainly, you know, as we digitize, you know, there's scope to always, you know, keep abreast of what's happening, and you know, ensure that, you know, the regulations or the legislations are up to date. I think in terms of the energy sector as well, it takes a while for amendments or for things to actually, you know, come into fruition, in terms of, you know, once things are put in place, it takes a while for, you know, for you to see the results of those things. So one of the main things that I would say in terms of from a regulatory perspective that we're aware of and thinking of how to address would be things like, you know, supply chain. So the regulations don't necessarily put requirements on operations of essential services to ensure that their supply chains have the right cyber security, or you know, have cyber protections. And that doesn't mean that, you know, they don't necessarily, that there aren't requirements for them to deal with it, and that they don't necessarily have those policies in place, but NIS itself doesn't have those, you know, those requirements. So one of the things that, you know, we're looking at is how do we ensure that the right mitigations are in place, you know, in terms of, you know, the supply chains. And they can be very varied. They go out of the country in terms of, you know, where organisations might get their supplies from, and that, you know, the tools that make up their infrastructure. So it's addressing that. Like I said, the NIS came from an EU directive, and last year, which was five years after the NIS directive, the EU actually conducted they kind of assessed it 5 years on, like a post-implementation review of it. And that was one of the things that was identified, is that, you know, there needs to be more done in terms of supply chains and kind of mitigating the threats that may be posed through that. So they're currently, they've released what's known as the NIS 2. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things that they're certainly looking to deal with on an EU level. And as you know, we always try to ensure that we are, you know, at least where possible, having the same, or you know, we reflect what our EU counterparts are doing. So this is something that we are also thinking about, you know, how do we ensure that, you know, we put more mitigation in place in terms of supply, and ensure that, you know, that we don't, you know, where you might have where operations of essential services might have, you know, the right mitigations in place in terms of their, you know, where, what they control, how we ensure that they don't face risks because of, you know, where they're getting their equipment from. Mm-hmm. And things like that.
Okay, no, that's quite interesting, and I say interesting because I know the financial sector is also doing the same thing, and that's why we have this whole thing on operational resilience, which was also our last podcast. You know, shameless plug there, but it's interesting that supply chain, because it is true, you know, you can control, you can do, there's only so much control you can do in your own organization, and then when you interact with other organizations, you know, there's only so much you can enforce the organization to do. Exactly. You know, you can have contracts and stuff, but ultimately you can't enforce it because you're not there 24/7. So it's nice that, you know, the UK and the EU are thinking about these things that you've discussed as well. So and again, I know with this question you may not have too many stories to tell me, but do you have any interesting stories, or maybe like a eureka moment that you're like, wow, I didn't know this, and this is an interesting information that you like to share? But obviously, if there is no stories that you could share, that's also fine.
I wouldn't say I have any stories per se. I mean, I guess working in policy, it's always, you know, as you know, you've been in government, so I think there's always, and you know, being in energy as well, I've been in it under a year now, so it's I feel like there's always, as you said, you know, coming into it and actually realizing, you know, energy cybersecurity, this is something that, you know, we think about. I guess for me the biggest eureka is, you know, we could go about our normal day, we know that, you know, there's a risk of, you know, blackouts and things like that, but we don't necessarily, I can safely say I don't think about it, you know. And you know, being Nigerian, if I was a Nigerian, that is something that I would be more conscious of, and you know, like my energy or my, like, you know, going out more so on a daily basis. But that's not something that necessarily in the UK or in the West that we necessarily consider on a day-to-day basis, and when they do happen, it's like, oh my gosh, you know, afterwards about to end. So, you know, thinking about actually realizing how much work goes into goes into ensuring that that doesn't happen. You know, we've seen worst case scenarios where, you know, for example, the Ukraine power grid attack, where there were, you know, there was a blackout in Ukraine that was caused because of a you know, cyber attack. How much financial implications that had, you know, as well as, like I said, the blackout that, you know, I think it was, I can't remember, it was about 2 to 3 hours or so, if I'm correct, that, you know, they were that region was without electricity. So realizing, you know, how much work goes into ensuring that, you know, our energy sector, our electricity sector is, you know, is protected. I guess, yeah, that's one thing that has, yeah, it's been striking to me, and it's been really good to be part of and ensure that, you know, we continue that and we protect our national infrastructure.
Yeah, I think when you were talking about Nigeria, because of Nigeria, I was like, hey, NEPA. Which is what came to my mind. So, you know, and with this question, I don't know if you'd be able to answer it, because I know you come more from like the regulatory space. And we've spoken a lot about what companies are doing and the government is doing. But with this podcast, we like to empower the individual, the end user. Is there any tips or any advice you would give individuals on ways they can improve their security when interacting with energy in their homes or work or wherever?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it would be similar to the typical advice in terms of ensuring that you're protected online, or, you know, ensuring that you're protected where, you know, you have digital equipment. So, you know, where there are, you know, passwords and things, ensuring that, you know, you make sure that they're strong, or that, you know, you don't share them with, you know, you don't share them with people that you don't trust, or, you know, if your organization, you know, if you get calls from people claiming to be from the organization that you get, you know, energy from, ensuring that, you know, you verify their identity. And then also holding your organization's account, you know, what do they do with your data? How do they protect your data? Things like that. And, you know, where you have, you know, smart meters and things at home. Ensure, I'd say it's the classic stuff, is ensuring that, you know, you have the right mitigations in place yourself, you know. Do I share my passwords? Is it strong enough? You know, what am I doing online? So I'd say it's the typical things. And yeah, like I said, the main thing for me is, and I now know that, you know, I can, you know, go to my organization or provider and be like, okay, what are you doing, you know, with my data? How are you protecting it? How are you ensuring that, you know, we're kind of safe? So yeah, I'd say those are the main things. And with energy, it's certainly, from a NIST perspective, it's less focused on, you know, the individual. And as you said, it is important that, you know, we think about it. You know, it's one of those things that you don't think about. You don't think, oh my gosh, my energy, you know. And I was having a conversation yesterday how we just accept these new kind of digital tools, mm-hmm. and the increase in how digitized our world is and our lives are. You know, back in the days we had dial-up. That was actually what started the conversation. You know, we had dial-up, and if one person was on the phone, you couldn't be on the internet, and now, you know, you have it
AOL back then.
You know what I mean? Yes. So, you know, you have it at the tip of your fingers, to the point where, you know, your energy is now even, you know, digital and sitting in a cloud somewhere potentially. So yeah, it's being aware and conscious of the fact that, you know, this is something that, you know, is digitized as well. So I'd say those are the main things.
No, those are amazing tips, and like you said, we are just too accepting. And I think with this podcast is to try and bring the individual into the conversation, because I feel like we're so detached from the tools that we use, the food that we eat, that we don't think about the supply chain, we don't think about how everything is done. And it's kind of crazy.
Which I guess also it's not for us sometimes to think about, which is where, you know, regulations come in place, and, you know, we ensure that the organisations that do have to think about it are thinking about it. So
I think you're right. There's definitely two ways, but, you know, I've learnt so much in this podcast, and I'm sure people listening have heard so much as well, and you've learnt. I just quickly wanted to talk about Sidia, and then I'm going to give you a chance as well, because I know they'll be interested in contacting you and reaching out to you, and maybe some people might want to even go into the industry of like cybersecurity within energy. So this podcast is created by Sadia, and Sadia is a social enterprise that helps Black minority ethnic women transition and enter the cybersecurity industry. We actually have a virtual internship program which just opened up. So if you're interested in that, definitely do check out our website at sadia.org. And now I'm going to pass on to our VVIP, our special guest.
I love this.
How can the audience reach out to you?
Yeah, certainly. I think the main way to reach out to me would be on LinkedIn. So I am on LinkedIn, Japan, and I'm sure you'll have details in. Is it going to be on YouTube comment section?
Yeah, it's going to be on YouTube, and this is also going to be available on podcast on Spotify and Apple iTunes, all the Spotify places.
So Sharif Lahan, probably the best way to reach me. Connect.
Thank you so much for coming on our platform again. We're so happy to have you.
Thank you.